Good morning. Today is Pentecost Sunday, 50 days on from Easter Sunday, and the day that we celebrate the coming of the Holy Spirit. So we're taking a break from the letter of James today and having a look at Acts 2 verses 1 to 12. Let me read it to you. When the day of Pentecost came, all the believers were gathered together in one place. Suddenly there was a noise from the sky which sounded like a strong wind blowing, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. Then they saw what looked like tongues of fire which spread out and touched each person there. They were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to talk in other languages as the Spirit enabled them to speak. There were Jews living in Jerusalem, religious people who had come from every country in the world. When they heard this noise, a large crowd gathered. They were all excited because all of them heard the believers talking in their own languages. In amazement and wonder, they exclaimed, "These people who are talking like this are Galileans. How is it then that all of us hear them speaking in our own native languages? We are from Parthia, Media and Elam, from Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, from Pontus and Asia, from Phrygia and Pamphylia, from Egypt and the regions of Libya near Cyrene. Some of us are from Rome, both Jew and Gentile, converted to Judaism, and some of us are from Crete and Arabia, yet all of us hear them speaking in our own language about the great things that God has done." Amazed and confused, they kept asking each other, "What does this mean?" Now, Pentecost is one of the three great Jewish festivals, but it's also a Christian one. It was on the Jewish day of Pentecost that Jesus' promise of the Holy Spirit was fulfilled. The remarkable events that we've just read about marked the beginning of the Christian church, so technically today is the church's birthday. But mention of the Holy Spirit also seems to divide Christians. Some describe themselves as born-again Christians, born again of the Spirit in the words of John 3, seemingly implying that others who don't readily use that language are lesser Christians or perhaps not even Christians at all. Then there are those who say that the sign that someone has received the Holy Spirit is that they will speak in tongues. Still others describe their churches and ministers as Spirit-led, while the rest of the churches are dead. Church history throws up a lot of things that we have to work through and that were not there at the beginning, which is why it's always good to go back to the text and the original story. Three things strike me about the story that we read. The first thing is timing. God chose a moment of maximum impact. Jerusalem was heaving with Jewish and God-fearing Gentile pilgrims from around the world. When they witnessed the strange events of those days, they were bound to go home and talk about it. Multilingual apostles who were able to communicate the news about Jesus in every single language and dialect present. What an extraordinary moment, and witnessed by such an array of people. But it was probably about far more than just a big turnout. Passover and Pentecost offer us two parallel stories. For the Jews, Passover was the moment when the Egyptian Pharaoh relented and set the Hebrew slaves free. And Pentecost was the moment 50 days later when Moses delivered God's instructions for living in the Promised Land, what we call the Ten Commandments. And then for Christians, Passover was when Jesus died in order to save the world, and Pentecost was when the Spirit came to help us to live out our godly destiny. The connection is not lost on Paul, who waxes eloquent about these things in 2 Corinthians 3. "Where the Spirit of the Lord is," he writes, "there is freedom." Secondly, harmony. Acts 2 begins by saying that the disciples were all together in one place. Now, of course, sometimes language is layered. There's the obvious physical meaning, but the writer may also want you to understand that there was a togetherness of purpose and identity. After all, that's what the previous chapter, Acts 1, is all about. Jesus says, "Wait in Jerusalem for the Spirit to come, so that you can be my witnesses to the ends of the earth." That's our purpose, to be witnesses to Jesus. And then there's this section in the second half of Acts 1 about identity, where Judas is replaced by Matthias so that the number of apostles is back up to 12. Israel had 12 tribes, and the followers of Jesus are now the new Israel, Our purpose is, like Israel's, to be a light to the nations. But nearly 2,000 years on, and the truth is that we're not together in harmony anymore. We're a multitude of fragmented breakaway groups divided by centuries of dogma and fighting and intolerance. Liverpool and Everton, Celtic and Rangers. You don't have to scratch very deep before you find a history of Catholic and Protestant division and hostility. Wouldn't it be nice to get back to our roots? People called to embody the good news of Jesus and seeking the power of the Holy Spirit to fulfill that mission. I wonder what church will be like when lockdown ends. Will we return to the old formality, dressing up smartly on Sunday mornings and performing our Baptist liturgy? Will we give up those Zoom meetings where people talked about the challenges they are facing in their lives and prayed for each other? Will we identify each other by where we sit rather than who we are? Early Pentecostals serve as an interesting illustration. Pentecostalism didn't formally come along until quite late, 1906 to be precise. Although there was a build-up to it, historians tend to locate its birth in a back street in Los Angeles, where a multi-ethnic congregation, not very common in those days, I should add, sought and tasted the power of God. Yes, there was speaking in tongues and lots of prophecies, but in many ways it was a movement all about class. Ministry had been dominated by the elite, the educated upper classes, and ornate 19th century church buildings mirrored their wealth. And so, rather like the manger in Bethlehem, a fresh touch of God's presence revealed itself in a socially downbeat meeting of believers in Azusa Street, Los Angeles. Since then, Pentecostalism has mushroomed with millions worldwide, yet sometimes sacrificing that sense of identity and purpose for a weekly dose of drama and excitement. All movements, it seems, are capable of clinging to the form and dumping the substance. Paul wrote to the Christians in Ephesus, "Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." That doesn't mean trying to agree on everything, because you'll never do that. But have an agreed sense of your identity and your purpose in this world. We are the people of God, called out of darkness into his wonderful light, and commissioned to be agents of good news in the world, the good news according to Jesus. That, hopefully, is not too complicated, and it's the harmony I pray for at Wood Grange. And then thirdly, reach. So all the disciples received the Holy Spirit and spoke in tongues. Now, speaking in tongues pops up a few times in the New Testament. Here and there in the book of Acts, as people responded to the apostles' message, we're told that they were baptized and spoke in tongues. Some have turned this into a doctrine, and they say that the evidence that you have received the Holy Spirit is that you speak in tongues. So if you haven't spoken in tongues, you might not have received the Holy Spirit. In 1 Corinthians 14, Paul says that when a person speaks in tongues, they are talking to God, so that you might expect any interpretation to be a prayer rather than a prophecy. All this stuff was hot gossip in the 1960s and 70s, so if you're my age or older, you'll understand all these little nuances. But here in Acts 2, something different is going on. The disciples find themselves miraculously speaking in the native languages of the pilgrims who have come to Jerusalem for the festival. What's going on? You need to track back to Genesis 11, a notoriously difficult story to interpret. But where the people decide they want to build a tower that reaches up to heaven, yet are frustrated when God confuses their language so that they can't or won't understand each other. Here in Acts 2, the situation is reversed. The ability of the disciples to speak many languages brings clarity. It brings people together. But get this, it also means that this good news is for everyone from all parts of the world. God is interested in our reach. Now, that term reach is often referred to in heavyweight boxing, where the physical assets of the two fighters are compared. It's not just about weight. If you have a long arm and a decent jab, you can cancel out your opponent's superior punching power. Reach is important. Businesses want to extend the reach of their products, so they adapt them to different cultures and markets. Don't tell anyone this, but years ago, Lois and I visited the Guinness Museum and Factory in Dublin. We trawled our way through the information on display, the importance and unique qualities of the water from the River Liffey, the key ingredients like barley and malt and the precise way these were blended together, the extraordinary skill of the coopers who made the wooden barrels. But then there was something surprising. The recipe actually varied depending on which country the company was exporting to. For some parts of the world, the bitter taste needed softening. I don't like bitters, so Lois had to drink my pint as well as hers at the end of that visit. The church is in the business of reaching out. Multicultural is something to aspire to. Right now, some of the rhetoric we're hearing is not helping to bring people together. President Trump has withdrawn American funding from the World Health Organization because they failed to deal with China effectively. And we have Chinese friends in the UK who are being blamed for the virus. Cross-cultural relations are being undermined by fresh outbursts of hostile language. Some years ago, I read the book Miracle on the River Kwai. It concerns the story of Japan's attempt to expand its empire during World War II, and specifically a fast-tracked project to build a 250-mile railway through Thailand and into Burma. They used unsuspecting local labour and also allied POWs to do this. The work was grueling, the working conditions appalling, and the brutality of the guards sickening. 102,000 allied prisoners perished from a combination of malnutrition, dysentery, and disease. After the bombing of Hiroshima, itself an appalling piece of retaliation, Japan surrendered and the prisoners were taken home. As they were being transported, one group of men belonging to the Scottish Argyle Regiment came across some beleaguered Japanese soldiers, in turn wounded and neglected. And so they went over and offered them some of their rations. "What fools you are," said one Allied officer responsible for repatriating them. "These are the people who starved and beat you and killed your comrades. These are the enemy." To which, and inspired by that well-known story of the Good Samaritan, an Argyle officer replied, "God doesn't make enemies, he makes friends." The Spirit comes to help us to reach out with the love of God to the whole world. He wants to extend the reach of our churches, both locally and globally. He wants all the nations to experience the beauty of Jesus. So, timing, harmony, and reach. These are some of the themes worth reflecting on today.